watching called Eilat. When he became ambassador for Israel, an old Jewish old woman appeared to him and said, greeted him and said, but when are they finally going to make you a consul? They're the highest office known to such people. Half the people in England don't know what their aim is. Yes. Believe me, not everyone knows. Yes. Then I finally refused, and that's a secret that I have to tell you, an appearance.
When did this?
I was offered it twice. Mrs. Thatcher.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. About 2 months after I was in office, I suddenly received one of these famous letters. Saying, dear Professor Berlin, I think, said that if it wasn't the time, I should have it in mind to advise Her Majesty and all this. It said, life period, I suppose. Must be barren if you didn't want it. And, but that was marvelous, because it arrived, my secretary opened the letter and said, you're being offered a peerage. I said, well, am I? I said, no question about that. Would you mind taking a letter? Dear Prime Minister. No, immediately. No thought, no consultation.
Because you didn't want to be Baron Berlin.
No. I'll tell you, I thought of some vulgarity in a period by then. First of all, partly snobbish reasons, and partly others. I'll tell you why.
Annan has one.
Oh, but everybody has one. But Trevor Roper has one.
Yeah.
I mean, Bullock is one. I mean, who doesn't? No. First of all, I thought all these. It was after Wilson. A lot of Jews were all terrible kind. I mean, crooks got it. One of them went to suicide. One of them went to jail. I thought, what? To add to the number of Jewish players in the House of Lords, the company was really rather. And I thought not only they, but everybody. Lord Lever, Lord. I don't know, Seaford.
Lord Lever is very distinguished.
I know, nonsense. Quite a nice man. Quite clever, quite funny. But,
not distinguished.
Well, he was a perfectly good Labour minister, but, yeah. I mean, intelligent. But I agree with him, no harm in that. But then I suddenly thought, well, I don't know that everyone is being made. Lord, this is on the whole. It's a, I don't know, I just felt it was, the company was rather getting undistinguished. And, that's a snobbish reason. The other reason was that if I was in the House of Lords, if I took it, I'd probably have to go there.
Yes.
I'd feel some conscience about that.
Yes.
Because obviously that's why she gave it. I mean, the idea was that
yeah.
I would function. She thought, and it was quite clear why she wanted to give it to me, because Wilson had given it to all these extremely ropey Jews. At last, she wanted to give it to a respectable one, who in her opinion was politically not too bad.
Yes.
You see? And I think that must be the motive. I can't think of any other motive. She didn't know me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I met her once, which scared me. And so the other motive was that supposing Palestine comes up, as usual. Well, I wouldn't want to speak, and I'd have to. And people would write me letters saying, you must say something, do say something. I'd then have 3 sleepless nights, because on the one hand, I would feel I had to defend them, on the other hand, they'd be very badly. As usual,
yes.
And that I couldn't say these things sincerely, then I get into trouble for not being praising enough, or again, got into trouble for not being blaming enough, and so that's what I should take on. And I knew I'd have conscience. I wouldn't just not go, as people usually do. Mm-hmm. Just not go.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, if I had to politically, I don't like talking in public, I don't think it would be ultimately a nightmare to me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be criticized for not doing it.
Yes.
And so on, you see. Told what to do. So on.
Yes.
I've got the committees for this and that. Asked to sign letters.
Yes.
So on. So, there's no doubt, I mean, that went to my head. I had no doubt at all. Within 2 minutes of the letter being read to me, which I never even read it, I said, no. Dictated nonsense. Very rapidly.
But then it happened.
And then I got a letter from, well, then about 3 months later, she wrote to me again.
Mm-hmm.
So distressed she was. I didn't accept it. The House of Lords needed people exactly like me, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Would I reconsider? Mm-hmm. Would I reconsider?
Mm-hmm.
Still, I was amused to be offered it. People usually ask me, why would you go over the peerage? I say, I can't think why not.
That must be amazing.
Well, it is. Yeah. I say, of course I would have been. Actually, I can't. I'm very offended. I must be in a bad box. She must know that I wrote for SDP. I go back to the earlier story.
I want to know about the OM now. I want to know what it... Who was...
I left Oxford not to have to answer the press. Yeah. I thought they'd bring me up.
Yeah.
They didn't, in fact. And, nor was my mother much bothered. But I met her a letter to Maurice Barra, apologizing for accepting it.
Right.
Of course, you would deserve it far better. So. That's what I thought. I couldn't take him right in the...
Yes. And what did he say in reply?
He didn't say anything in reply. But he talked about several other people. Oh, well, he said, it's a rich man's CH. He got CH himself in the end, because he taught the... kept saying to me, I want to... something put around my neck, you know. Too awful. It was really what he believed. He was a kind of great man, but... at fault.
Yeah.
Of taste.
Oh, thank you.
Nice. I'm in favor of the honor system, just not for me. That's my position.
You're
I mean, I've nothing against it.
Why
I'm not again, I'm not, because I don't see why not. People like them.
Yeah.
People can be honored for public service.
Yeah.
I don't think it's pedantic to object. I don't think it makes much difference. But not for me. I just felt I didn't enjoy it.
Not for me. You've enjoyed two great honors.
Enjoyed. Philip Toynbee said to me, in 10 years' time, you won't mind being a knight in the least. I still mind it.
Hmm.
I'd much rather not be Sir Isaiah. He's useful in restaurants. And that's about all. One of Aline's aunts was rather pleased. But I got it.
But you must be pleased he's a knight, aren't you?
Right.
Are you pleased that he's a knight?
Well, nobody's not. Nobody's not. And who isn't?
I mean, Jen, I didn't expect you.
Some people were indignant, by the way. The warden of Nuffield, Chester,
yes,
the man warden of Nuffield, he couldn't understand why I was going to the OM and complained, high and wide.
Really?
Well, partly because he had a certain reason for resenting me. In 1953, Nuffield College, in its beginnings, had proper fellows, and North had faculty fellows, which meant you were a fellow of another college, but you were allowed to be a kind of external fellow while they were being sort of... nurtured, probably. And I was one of these because I was a good friend of Cole, my predecessor, who was a natural fellow from Nuffield, because the library was there, I needed to work there.
And he made me,
I liked him very much. And he made me, some people don't know, gave the Jenkins a sort of terrible man.
Why?
I don't know, he must have offended them in some way. And he was a rather childish man, but he was a good character. But anyway, he made me a faculty fellow, and then we all had to write letters about who we wanted to be made warden. And I wrote a letter and recommended Roy Harrod, I remember. Got exactly one vote, that was mine. And then I was in at Harvard. Suddenly I received a telegram saying it had been unanimously elected warden of Nuffield if I wanted it. For everyone. Who knows? Well, I was delighted because I'd never been offered anything in the open market in my life before.
Mm.
Everything I had before, I applied for.
Mm.
And I was never offered a chair or anything like that.
Yes.
So well, I wasn't a professor then anyway. 16. And I didn't know what to do, and I thought, well, 50 I mean. And I then wondered what to do. I was at Harvard. Well, again, I consulted everybody, of course.
Were you there for a year at Harvard?
For a term. This was, roughly speaking, the autumn of the I mean, September to February, whatever it is. And I wondered if I really could be. And I thought, well, in a way, it's rather nice to stop being professor. Because it's much easier to be a college to be professor than a cadet. How this work, at a graduate. On the other hand, economics and that sort of politics wasn't my sort of thing at all. And you know economics.
Yeah.
And applied politics to
you. They're
like, well.
We weren't married then.
No,
you wrote him a long letter.
Telling me not. Telling me not.
Why did you think it was a bad idea?
I didn't think it was a nice place for it.
Well, it was rather functional. Functional, ugly. And not a real college. No, institute. Institute, really. Yeah. No institute.
It would have been right for him to be offered new college or Balliol.
That's right, that would have been right.
Well, then I remember meeting Szilard, who was the physicist.
Leo Szilard.
Leo, my new. And I said to him, I prefer nothing. But I mean, not because I could help you. I said, we're not enough, you've got my money. I wonder where I would take it. He said, oh, it's quite easy. You go to Lord Nuffield, you say to him, I'll turn out that bunch of reds. Give as much as you like. The music man.
That's right. It's a good story.
Then I travelled back to London, Oxford. And I was visited by the senior fellow, who was called Miss Perham, who was a colonial historian. I tried to persuade me to take it. And then I received a visit with McDougall, professor, tried to persuade me to take it. Lord, present Lord Beloff was a bit displeased because he wanted it. And then I knew I was going to do it. I consulted Sparrow, who said, if you want to be near the station, the prison is even nearer. Why don't you become governor of the prison? My father was dying. I came back before time, was dying of leukemia. I called him in the hospital, in the cancer hospital. He said, no, no account. Don't take it. It's not right for you at all. It's quite firm.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you think he knew
that? He'd been in Oxford, you see, during the war. I don't know, he had some sense of what it was.
Yeah.
That it was a kind of economic diplomacy, not a real college. Yeah. No, he was, I don't know why, he was absolutely clear in his mind. It was so.
Yeah.
So then, I received a letter from Chester, who was one of the senior fellows, who said, all my life I wanted to be Warden Walsall, it's been the ambition all my life. Chester, I'm deeply disappointed not to be chosen. So I wish to assure you, if you accept, I hope you will, I shall not resign, I never thought you would. I shall be loyal, I shall collaborate, I shall cooperate. Perfectly nice letter. To which I replied saying, things change in the world, you know. One never can tell what will happen. But 2 days later, refused. He was then elected. He knew he had it in my hands. That's something which one ultimately resents for the rest of one's life.
Yes.
That someone should have.
Yes.
You only get it because somebody else didn't.
Yes.
After you, you see. Still, it's my story with nothing.
And he was resentful of your getting the OM.
He was very resentful. Yes. And Mrs. Hart said to me, do you knock about Buckingham Palace much these days? Do you see the Queen a lot? Couldn't see it either. Lots of people couldn't. It's a very curious thing to be given to me.
Yes.
Which it was. Yes. I didn't mind it. No. But,
what does it involve?
Nothing. Lunch. In Windsor, the Buckingham Palace, once in 5 years.
Any contact, informal or otherwise, with other members?
Nothing, nothing. No meeting occur. The lunch is with the following members.
Yes.
We're all geriatric. They will come at 2-6, in articular mortis. And a very, very old man's towel.
Who are the OM now?
At the moment? What was the oldest? Wait, I'll tell you who they are.
Comrade Lorenz? No, no, I'm
sorry. What?
No, not Lorenz, but...
Franks?
Yes, Oliver Franks.
K. Clark was. These are after me. Henry Moore was. I'll tell you who they are. Graham Greene is.
Dorothy Hodgkin?
Right. Dorothy Hodgkin, certainly. And Veronica Wedgwood, they told you. The man who invented, who commercialized them, the airplane, because he fought, you know, engineer called Edwards.
Yes.
Who invented, what are they called?
Jet propulsion.
Yeah. No. Nothing to do with that. No. But Michael Whittle.
Yes.
Now, he really is fond of jet engine.
Yes.
I mean, Concord.
Yes.
Concord, you were given it by Prince Philip, naturally.
Yes.
Okay? Yes. You got it. I'll tell you who got it with me. The Prime Minister of Canada, what's his name? Got it. Your turn. Lester Pearson.
All right. Yes. Very good man.
Very good man. I knew him. He was in the embassy in Washington during the war.
Yes.
What did we call him? We didn't call him just
Mike.
Mike. Exactly. He got exactly then with me and with Edwards. And who else? Wait a minute. Who else will this? Lord Zuckerman? He's there with me. Scientists, by and large. Uncle Sanger.
Sanger,
got two Nobel Prizes. Two Nobel Prizes.
Incredible.
Yes. See? Hodgkin, I mean, not the Helen Hodgkin, her cousin.
Yes.
He has it. What?
William Golding?
No. This kind of thing.
Is Conrad Lorenz, not Conrad Lorenz, but the other one. I was confused.
Tinbergen. I mean, no. What do you mean? What, mythology?
Yes, the mythologist.
Well, that was a good Tinbergen. He was Conrad Lorenz was his pupil, I think. Do you mean?
Prince Charles, kind of, sort of mentor.
Oh, yes, no, you haven't got it yet. No, you mean, he's on the college, he's just a Burke's guru.
Yes.
Well, then you mean, Boris Van der Post.
Yes, Van der Post.
No, he didn't know that. No. Mm. Also, friend of Mrs. Thatcher. No.
Carl
Popper? Something in theatre, he called.
Is Carl Popper?
Popper. Does not have it. Gombrich, I think, has it. No. Gombrich, I think, does. Gombrich does, Popper not.
Yes.
Popper does, I can't remember. No, I don't think he does.
Do you have cordial relations with Gombrich, man?
Oh, yes. Yes. Perfectly.
Not intimate. Not
no, conscious. No. Not a very intimate sort of man. No, but we get on, I mean, we always go to the same concerts.
Yes.
Alfred.
Yes.
There's his concert always meet there.
Yes.
And we chat away. I got his son to come to Wolfson College, and my dame's son. We have good times.
Yes.
I like him. I'm brilliant. Trying to think. The last lunch was in Buckingham Palace.
And the Queen?
Sime I got it for.
Yes.
The Roman historian.
Ronald Sime.
From New Zealand, I want to give it to somebody. Mm. Empire.
Yes.
Never did I ever hear to him, but he was very much deserves it.
Yes.
The best historian living, I think.
Is he?
Just about.
Really?
No better, nobody's better in his field than he is in his. Mm. It's literally the most distinguished historian in any language, in any country.
Yeah.
It shows up maybe how low history has fallen. But it is true. You can't think of anybody who's a sort of historian of genius now, or thought to be.
Yes.
Maybe he isn't.
Yes. Is he a stylist?
Yeah, writes very well. Writes very well. Mm. He's written these three or four books about Roman. But Roman trip and completely epoch made this. Yes. You would have been doing that.
Yes.
Or my cousin.
That's the
track. Okay, yes. You would have it, yes. Kind of icon, he is.
Yes.
Who else?
And you meet with the Queen when you
She's heir of the order.
Yes. And what's that like?
So the Duke is also heir of the order, but not the Prince of Wales. He's not. Yes. Not towards just lunch. We all meet in the room, walk down this, shake hands.
Yes.
We're then put in the order of seniority, I think.
Yes.
And then we have lunch. No speeches are made.
Yes.
I don't know if anyone takes the toast, perhaps they do, perhaps they do. Mount Batten used to it. And nobody else did. And then we disperse.
Yes.
And now photograph. Not paintings have been ordered, drawings, of us all.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Each individually?
Yeah. Right. I've had one I call Ward, who's a perfectly good, decent, super hack painter. Quite good.
Yeah.
It took 3 hours, I think. Perfectly right.
And have small talk with the Queen. I mean, you, mm.
He wanders around a little bit. Doesn't talk to me much.
Yes.
But not much. I mean, she talks to the women mainly.
Yes.
Oh,
really?
The colonials. There's no black member of it. Foreign members, maybe there are. There's supposed to be half military, half civilian. There are very few soldiers now.
Yes.
If any, indeed. But there are any eminent. Any eminent. Yamanu. Commanders in chief.
And your mum lived to see that investiture as well.
Mm-hmm.
Your investiture in the OM.
When it goes alone.
Oh, yes.
To be met by the Queen, when there's a private audience.
Oh, yes.
She talked about student troubles.
Right.
Which would tell you when it was. Mm. That's been the sort of 67 or 8. Mm-hmm. That's about it. Mm. I think then, 68, 9, I mean, that's all date. Maybe 72. I can't tell you what it ran about then.
Well, I can find out.
Easily. Says so in Who's Who.
We've talked.
My real shame is number 100 degrees that I have. It's now become 20.
Yes.
Which is absurd.
Why it's absurd? Why do you.
Because I'm the.
You put on a certain show of self-deprecation. This is rather complicated. I can never quite understand it.
Quite genuine. I really don't think I deserve them. I just have great respect for real thinkers and real scholars.
What's
and neither one or the other.
Lady Gowrie,
what?
The Countess of Gowrie.
Certainly the Countess of Gowrie.
I have to say that?
Absolutely. Why not? She won't mind if you don't. We can also call her Grafin, whatever she was before.
Gowrie,
R.I.E.
How did
you
finish Gowrie?
G-O-R-R-I-E.
Twenty honorary degrees.
I've just received the last one. I'm just about to go. Receive one at Yale.
Oh.
Jenkins is very excited about this. He said, you've got from Oxford, Cambridge, Harvard, and Yale. Nobody's ever had all this before.
Nobody has.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
How can I tell?
And you don't have to give speeches, happily.
I make it a condition, I don't. I'm very happy to receive it, provided.
Yes.
So I go to Yale in June, end of May.
Have you had any citation, any honor in which the citation made you laugh or seemed wildly implausible or describing another person? Or
I think so. I don't think I would listen to them. But I think they are absurd very often.
Yeah.
Usually it's come as a historian. But I'm obviously not.
Why not? You're a good historian.
No, not a historian at all. Of ideas at most. And historians don't recognize history of ideas as history. Like being a historian of furniture. No, no. Philosopher, I wouldn't mind. Thinker.
Sage.
Well, that wonderful moment when, you know what I mean by Montague James?
Is it more tea?
No, thank you.
Montague James, who wrote those ghost stories.
Yes.
When he left being Provost of Eton to become Provost of Kings, one of the old fellows of Kings said, you know the story, you must. Was the Nathaniel Weir, the one, it's mythological people,
yes.
Said, that's the end of thinking at Kings. It was true. Absolutely right. It was. It's the end of that. He was a very so elegant, snobbish, classical figure. Thinking was not the thing. End of thinking at Kings. What is?
I wanted to. We've talked about your mother. We've talked about many of the things I wanted to talk about this time, but I'm wondering perhaps we should stop now. You have to go out to.
We're going. You know, we're going to a party in the same temple.
No. And I will withdraw. And amazing.
I don't go yet.
I didn't admit that to the ladies I had lunch with.
You didn't?
They've been too shocked. I know. They would have been too shocked.
Want to get
a very nice lunch it
was. Want a bit of diabetic chocolate? Dad, a biscuit.
Diabetic chocolate. But they were charming two ladies.
I'm extremely naughty. I sit here munching on nuts, which I hear is not very good for his teeth.
No, it's both all right now.
No,
no, it's all right.
Not munching.
My teeth are all right.
I don't remember dropping it all day long. It's true.
Very good one. Well, the country's excellent one.
Oh, it's very good.
Yes. No, let me tell you.
It's a diabetic chocolate. You aren't diabetic, are you?
Not diabetic.
No.
He thinks it's
well,
less
think fattening. Less fattening, it is too. Well, I'm a maniac about lots of things. I take lots of vitamins in the morning. They do no good at all.
But you take them.
Not all is the no good. And I believe they do. No good. I do take them. It's like a morning prayer.
Speaking of morning prayer, I've just been in Bradford all week talking to the Muslims about Bradford.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Go on.
Are you broadcasting?
I'm doing a whole program about it, which I'll tell you about when it comes up.
Oh, good.
What about them? Did you find any of them at all sympathetic?
Oh, deeply sympathetic. Deeply. That's what was puzzling.
People nice
who,
people.
People who said, at least,
nice people.
Oh yeah, people who said publicly that they were prepared to kill Salman Rushdie, and with whom I had a shouting match on, matters of principle, would invite me into their homes, had adorable children, had these kind of incredibly plain, bare, slightly depressing, semi-detached houses with kind of, settees bought from rather bad furniture stores, but a kind of sweetness about them and kindness and I found it rather fascinating what they're going through. And I find it truly fascinating to see people who, on the one hand, want their children to go to Muslim schools, wear Muslim dress, beautiful Muslim dress, and then allow them to come home, turn on the television, and watch Neighbors,
quite so.
And then extremely devout Muslims saying,
simple people.
Yes, simple people, but very devout people saying, and talking about the various religious duties that happen in Ramadan, and then driving you out to their restaurant where they say, "Would you like a beer?" And it suddenly dawns on you that it's exceedingly odd for a Muslim to be selling alcohol. So you say, "Why are you selling alcohol?" And he says, "Oh, no, we have a major problem. We have a little, ambiguity, a contradiction in my ethics." And I say, "Well, can you go on?" I said, "Well, if I don't sell alcohol, I lose my business. And so you see, my Quran and my business are not compatible." They use other words, but that's
what
it comes down to.
That's what they mean.
And they're rather charming. And the other thing that struck me powerfully, and I suppose this is the kind of Russian side, is the family structure has to be seen to be believed.
So close.
Indescribable. I mean, but much more so than any possible Russian context, but it had somehow faintly Eastern European echoes to me. But it's a different
quite.
Thing, because it's arranged marriages, so and people marry their first cousins and God knows what. The arranged marriages are absolutely baffling. You sit, these husband and wife couples who are, seem to me perfectly good marriages, you see if you're around a family for a day, you see whether there's tension, you see whether they seem to get on
beautifully.
Fine. They have not met each other until the day of their marriage.
And then get on beautifully.
And then, well...
They know each other, they know what the others want.
And I say, yes, and it's a case where the roles are so clearly defined by the culture that they just put the individuals
in
them.
It's the same as Jews in the Pale of Settlement.
Really?
Arranged marriages.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There were these marriage brokers.
Yes.
Yeah, but that was
100
years ago,
exactly.
I thought, that it should be happening.
What?
It was 100 years ago, I know.
Well, of course 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But that's they're still living 100 years ago. These people do belong 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's true they don't know each other, the children, or whatever it is.
They won't. They won't know each other. I mean, occasionally they will meet on their engagement party, and then they will be separated, and then meet again at their marriage. But it's very struggle. But then you come across that moment where it's all very strange, and then you talk to the wife and you say, "I suppose you want many children, assuming that birth control is not what the Quran prescribes." Oh, she says, "Oh no, just two." So but that must assume some form of family limitation.
They
go to the clinics, they go, you know, she has a good NHS doctor who happens to be an Asian doctor, but she wants all the latest medical stuff. I say, how's your pregnancy? As I would to a Western woman. She says, oh, a little bit difficult. So you have a sense of a culture that on the one hand is decided very much in response to the Rushdie affair, I think, among other things, and all the other currents in Islam, to become more separate, to become more fundamentalist, to withdraw, to put the chador on the children. And on the other hand, interpenetrated at every point by Western society, so that they live a kind of, it's as if they cross time zones from one century to the other within seconds of each other in the same house. I found it very interesting.
But do they have English friends or not? Very not. Not much interracial.
No. But again, surprises. I go into one of these Muslim, separatist Muslim schools where everybody wears the veil and where they don't want men in at all. We have to get special permission. It's a great story. And who do I find in the middle of the court but an old English school mom, white, you know, severe, strict, very middle class, very nicely dressed. Not at all someone in the multicultural relations
and old-fashioned school.
Really, teaching Kess, a rather mediocre British novel about the working class, to these kids. You ask her, she says, I don't know anything about Islam. I just wanted a part-time job, and it's a good job, and these are lovely kids, and they work hard. And when you talk to the kids, they all have drawn Yorkshire accents. But they're wearing this kind of Islamic veil. It's all very complicated.
But do they mix with other children apart from
school? No, you have a sense. I watched as the school closed. I saw a bunch of cars drive up and turbaned gentlemen who obviously chop onions in restaurants at night coming out and standing there, very solemn. And then the women come out, put not only the veil up over their head but over their face, so their faces are completely masked. Scuttle out of the school into these cars, the car door is shut, and daddy drives them back to the other enclosure. So they simply don't venture out into the public world. But in the school themselves, they're learning chemistry. You know, they're learning, doing basic physics. They're learning Kess. I say, what do you want the girls to be? She said, I would be happy if one of them became an industrial chemist. And you wonder, like Mrs. Thatcher, and you wonder, how could such a life be possible for someone raised like that? I say, do you teach the Darwinian theory? And they say, we expose our children to the Darwinian theory and we expose them to the Quranic theory.
They take
and we allow them to choose.
To choose, or we don't like truth. But we tell them what the infidel Darwin said.
And where do they come from? India,
mostly Pakistan. Mostly Pakistan and Bangladesh. And it's rather...
I understand that. I understand it perfectly. It's perfectly compatible. The idea of having a narrow, culturally completely insulated East inside the West exists on one end, and then techniques, which you just acquire for practical purposes.
Yeah.
How to make a scientific apparatus, how to cure it, so on.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Absolutely, I see that. I see that very clearly.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
And Western influences would not be likely to penetrate.
No.
Part because they didn't want the part because they're not attractive enough either to them.
No.
Why should
they
be tempted?
No, I was very struck by that as well. I suppose this is kind of more banal and less interesting thought, but just the simple fact that each Muslim in Bradford, be he ever so humble, working in a mill or chopping onions in the restaurants, and I went back into the kitchens in these restaurants and door to door, they just feel they are part of the world's largest, strongest, most militant religion. They really feel a sort of messianic sense that the tide of religious
history
is flowing in their direction. And they feel, and Bradford is an important place in that. It's part of the largest Muslim community in the Western world. So it feels very grand, and they have contacts with the Muslim community in Kenya, the Muslim community in Saudi Arabia, and the Muslim community in they regard the Ayatollah not as a kind of crazed lunatic, obviously, but as a man who stood up and said tout haut ce qu'il pensait tout bas. You know? And I think he went a little far if you push them, But basically, they feel rather...
Just sit for the old cult.
Slightly the way the British dockers felt about Enoch Powell, in a way. Yes. They know it's a bit extreme,
it's
but terrible, actually... But
it's what they already feel. The heart of hearts.
No, no. He has no spiritual authority over them directly, but a lot of them, frankly, admire.
No, but also, it's what they really believe in themselves, and he's just spoken it out aloud.
Yes.
In rather overstrong
language. What did they say then about the Russians?
Well, I've had some sort of slightly spine-tingling conversations, and since all my conversations now are in recorded, I mean, you'll see what it was like. I mean, they're just face-to-face with these people. Come out in early May. It's rather interesting. I gave no quarter. They seem to be the one of these late night ones. And I'll send you a tape if you
want.
It's too late for it.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's a Nyman thing. I'm not sure you read it already.